they met in the starlight at the edge of the glade, the king of the western lands and the master of Roke, the two powers of Earthsea.
Will he live? The summoner asked, and Labanan answered,
The healer says he is in no danger now.
I did wrong, said the summoner. I am sorry for it.
Why did you summon him back? The king asked, not reproving, but wanting an answer. After a long time, the summoner said grimly,
Because I had the power to do it.
They paced along in silence down an open path among the great trees. It was very dark to either hand, but the starlight shone gray where they walked.
I was wrong, but it is not right to want to die, the summoner said.
The burr of the East Reach was in his voice. He spoke low, almost pleadingly.
For the very old, the very ill, it may be. But life is given us. Surely it's wrong not to hold and treasure that great gift.
Death also is given us, said the king. Alder lay on a pallet on the grass. He should lie out under the stars, the patterner had said, and the old master Herbal had agreed to that. He lay asleep, and Tehanu sat still beside him. Tanar sat in the doorway of the low stone house and watched her. The great stars of late summer shone above the clearing. Highest of them, the star called Tehanu, the swan's heart, the linchpin of the sky. Seserac came quietly out of the house and sat down on the threshold beside her. She had taken off the circlet that held her veil, leaving her mass of tawny hair unbound. Oh, my friend, she murmured. What will happen to us? The dead are coming here. Do you feel them? Like the tide rising. Across that wall. I think nobody can stop them. All the dead people. From the graves of all the islands of the West. All the centuries.
Tanar felt the beating, the calling in her head and in her blood. She knew now, they all knew, what Alder had known. But she held to what she trusted, even if trust had become mere hope. She said, They are only the dead, Ezrach. We built a false wall. It must be unbuilt. But there is a true one. Tehanu got up and came softly over to them. She sat on the doorstep below them.
He's all right. He's sleeping, she whispered.
Were you there with him? Tanar asked. Tehanu nodded.
We were at the wall.
What did the summoner do?
Summoned him. Brought him back by force.
Into life.
Into life.
I don't know which I should fear more, Tanar said. Death or life. I wish I could be done with fear. Seserac's face, the wave of her warm hair, bent down to Tanar's shoulder for a moment in a light caress.
You are brave. Brave, she murmured.
But oh, I fear the sea, and I fear death. Tehanu sat quietly. In the faint, soft light that hung among the trees, Tanar could see how her daughter's slender hand lay crossed over her burnt and twisted hand.
I think, Tehanu said in her soft, strange voice, that when I die, I can breathe back the breath that made me live. I can give back to the world all that I didn't do, all that I might have been and couldn't be. All the choices I didn't make. All the things I lost and spent and wasted. I can give them back to the world. To the lives that haven't been lived yet. That would be my gift back to the world that gave me the life I did live. The love I loved. The breath I breathed.
She looked up at the stars and sighed.
Not for a long time yet, she whispered.
Then she looked round at Tanar. Seserac stroked Tanar's hair gently, rose, and went silently into the house.
Before long, I think, Mother.
I know.
I don't want to leave you.
You have to leave me.
I know. They sat on in the glimmering darkness of the grove, silent.
Look,
Tahanu murmured. A shooting star crossed the sky, a quick, slow-fading trail of light.
Five wizards sat in starlight. Look, one said, his hand following the trail of the shooting star.
The soul of a dragon dying, said Asver the Patterner. So they say in Karego At.
Do dragons die? Asked Onyx, musing.
Not as we do, I think. They don't live as we do. They move between the worlds. So says Orm Irion, from the world's wind to the other wind.
As we sought to do, said Seppel, and failed. Gamble looked at him curiously. Have you on Palm always known this tale, this lore we have learned today, of the parting of dragon and mankind and the making of the dry land?
Not as we heard it today. I was taught that the Verunadan was the first great triumph of the magic art, and that the goal of wizardry was to triumph over time and live forever. Hence the evils the Pelnish lore has done.
At least you kept the mother knowledge we despised, Onyx said. As your people did, Asver.
Well, you had the sense to build your great house here, the Patterner said, smiling.
But we built it wrong, Onyx said. All we build wrong.
So we must knock it down, said Seppel.
No, said Gamble. We're not dragons. We do live in houses. We have to have some walls, at least.
So long as the wind can blow through the windows, said Asver.
And who will come in the doors?
Asked the doorkeeper in his mild voice.
There was a pause.
A cricket trilled industriously somewhere across the glade, fell silent, trilled again.
Dragons, said Asver.
The doorkeeper shook his head.
Oh, I think maybe the division that was begun and then betrayed will be completed at last, he said.
The dragons will go free and leave us here to the choice we made.
The knowledge of good and evil, said Onyx.
The joy of making, shaping, said Seppel. Our mastery and our greed, our weakness, our fear, said Asver.
The cricket was answered by another, closer to the stream. The two trills pulsed, crossed, in and out of rhythm.
What I fear, said Gamble, so much that I fear to say it, is this, that when the dragons go, our mastery will go with them. Our art, our magic.
The silence of the others showed that they feared what he did. But the doorkeeper spoke at last, gently but with some certainty.
No, I think not. They are the making, yes. But we learned the making. We made it ours. It can't be taken from us. To lose it, we must forget it, throw it away.
As my people did, said Asver.
Yet your people remembered what the earth is, what life everlasting is, said Seppel, while we forgot.
There was another long silence among them.
I could reach my hand out to the wall, Gamble said in a very low voice. And Seppel said, they are near. They are very near. How are we to know what we should do? Onyx said.
Asver spoke into the silence that followed the question. Once, when my lord the Archmage was here with me in the grove, he said to me he had spent his life learning how to choose to do what he had no choice but to do.
I wish he was here now, said Onyx.
He's done with doing, the doorkeeper murmured, smiling.
But we're not. We sit here talking on the edge of the precipice. We all know it.
Onyx looked round at their starlit faces.
What do the dead want of us? What do the dragons want of us? Said Gamble. These women who are dragons. Dragons who are women. Why are they here? Can we trust them? Have we a choice? Said the doorkeeper. I think not, said the patterner. An edge of hardness, a sword's edge, had come into his voice. We can only follow. Follow the dragons? Gamble asked. Asver shook his head. Alder. But he's no guide, patterner, said Gamble. A village mender? Onyx said, Alder has wisdom, but in his hands, not his head. He follows his heart. Certainly he doesn't seek to lead us. Yet he was chosen from among us all. Who chose him? Seppel asked softly. The patterner answered him, The dead. They sat silent. The cricket's trill had ceased. Two tall figures came towards them through the grass lit gray by starlight. May Brand and I sit with you a while, the Bannon said. There is no sleep tonight.
On the doorstep of the house on the Overfell, Ged sat watching the stars above the sea. He had gone into sleep an hour or more ago, but as he closed his eyes, he saw the hillside and heard the voices rising like a wave. He got up at once and went outside where he could see the stars move. He was tired. His eyes would close, and then he would be there by the wall of stones, his heart cold with dread that he would be there forever, not knowing the way back. At last, impatient and sick of fear, he got up again, fetched a lantern from the house and lit it, and set off on the path to Moss's house. Moss might or might not be frightened. She lived pretty near the wall these days. But Heather would be in a panic, and Moss would not be able to soothe her. And since whatever had to be done, it wasn't he who could do it this time, he could at least go comfort the poor halfwit. He could tell her it was only dreams. It was hard going in the dark, the lantern throwing great shadows of small things across the path. He walked slower than he would have liked to walk and stumbled sometimes. He saw a light in the widower's house, late as it was. A child wailed over in the village.
Mother, mother, why are the people crying? Who are the people crying, mother?
There was no sleep there, either. There was not much sleep anywhere in Earthsea tonight, Ged thought. He grinned a little as he thought it, for he had always liked that pause, that fearful pause, the moment before things changed.
Alder woke. He lay on earth and felt its depth beneath him. Above him the bright stars burned, the stars of summer, moving between leaf and leaf with the winds blowing, moving from east to west with the worlds turning. He watched them a while before he let them go. Tehanu was waiting for him on the hill. What must we do, Hara? She asked him. We have to mend the world, he said. He smiled because his heart had grown light at last. We have to break the wall. Can they help us? She asked, but the dead were gathered waiting down in the darkness as countless as grass or sand or stars. Silent now, a great, dim beach of souls. No, he said, but maybe others can. He walked down the hill to the wall. It was little more than waist high here. He put his hands on one of the stones of the coping row and tried to move it. It was fixed fast, or was heavier than a stone should be. He could not lift it, could not make it move at all. Tehanu came beside him. Help me, he said. She put her hands on the stone, the human hand and the burnt claw, gripping it as well as she could, and gave a lifting tug as he did. The stone moved a little, then a little more. Push it, she said, and together they pushed it slowly out of place, grating hard on the rock beneath it, till it fell on the far side of the wall with a dull, heavy thump. The next stone was smaller, Together they could lift it up, out of its place. They let it drop into the dust on the near side. A tremor ran through the ground under their feet then. Small, chinking stones in the wall rattled, and with a long sigh, the multitudes of the dead came closer to the wall.
The patterner stood up suddenly and stood listening. Leaves stormed all about the glade. The trees of the grove bowed and trembled as if under a great wind, but there was no wind. "Now it changes," he said, and he walked away from them into the darkness under the trees. The summoner, the doorkeeper, and Seppel rose and followed him, quick and silent. Gamble and Onyx followed more slowly after them. Labanon stood up. He took a few steps after the others, hesitated, and hurried across the glade to the low house of stone and sod. "Irion," he said, stooping into the dark doorway. "Irion, will you take me with you?" She came out of the house. She was smiling, and there was a kind of fiery brightness all about her. "Come then, come quick," she said, and took his hand. Her hand burned like a coal of fire as she lifted him into the other wind.
After a little time, Sesarok came out of the house into the starlight, and after her came Tanar. They stood and looked about them. Nothing moved. The trees were still again.
"They are all gone," Sesarok whispered. "On the dragon's way."
She took a step forward, gazing into the dark.
"What are we to do, Tanar?"
"We are to keep the house," Tanar said.
"Oh,"
Sesarok whispered, dropping to her knees. She had seen Labanon lying near the doorway, stretched face down in the grass.
"He isn't dead, I think. Oh, my dear Lord King, don't go. Don't die."
"He's with them. Stay with him. Keep him warm. Keep the house, Sesarok," Tanar said. She went to where Alder lay, his unseeing eyes turned to the stars. She sat down by him, her hand on his. She waited.
Alder could scarcely move the great stone his hands were on, but the summoner was beside him, stooping with his shoulder against it, and said, "Now!" Together they pushed it till it overbalanced and dropped down with that same heavy, final thump on the far side of the wall. Others were there now with him and Tehanu, wrenching at the stones, casting them down beside the wall. Alder saw his own hands cast shadows for an instant from a red gleam. Orm Irion, as he had seen her first, a great dragon shape, had let out her fiery breath as she struggled to move a boulder from the lowest rank of stones, deep set in the earth. Her talons struck sparks and her thorned back arched, and the rock rolled ponderously free, breaching the wall entirely in that place. There was a vast, soft cry among the shadows on the other side, like the sound of the sea on a hollow shore. Their darkness surged up against the wall, but Alder looked up and saw that it was no longer dark. Light moved in that sky where the stars had never moved, quick sparks of fire far in the dark west. "Kalesin." That was Tehanu's voice. He looked at her. She was gazing upward, westward. She had no eye for earth. She reached up her arms. Fire ran along her hands, her arms, into her hair, into her face and body, flamed up into great wings above her head, and lifted her into the air, a creature all fire, blazing, beautiful. She cried out aloud, a clear, wordless cry. She flew high, headlong, fast, up into the sky where the light was growing and a white wind had erased the unmeaning stars. From among the hosts of the dead, a few here and there, like her, rose up, flickering into dragons, and mounted on the wind. Most came forward a foot. They were not pressing, not crying out now, but walking with unhurried certainty towards the fallen places in the wall. Great multitudes of men and women, who as they came to the broken wall did not hesitate, but stepped across it and were gone. A wisp of dust, a breath that shone an instant in the ever-brightening light. Alder watched them. He still held in his hands, forgotten, a chinking stone he had wrenched from the wall to loosen a larger rock. He watched the dead go free. At last, he saw her among them. He tossed the stone aside then and stepped forward. "Lily," he said. She saw him and smiled and held out her hand to him. He took her hand, and they crossed together into the sunlight.
Lebanon stood by the ruined wall and watched the dawn brighten in the east. There was an east now, where there had been no direction, no way to go. There was east and west and light and motion. The very ground moved, shook, shivering like a great animal, so that the wall of stones beyond where they had broken it shuddered and slid into rubble. Fire broke from the far black peaks of the mountains called Pain, the fire that burns in the heart of the world, the fire that feeds dragons. He looked into the sky over those mountains and saw, as he and Ged had seen them once above the western sea, the dragons flying on the wind of morning. Three came wheeling towards him where he stood among the others, near the crest of the hill above the ruined wall. Two he knew, Ormirian and Kalesin. The third had bright mail, gold, with wings of gold. That one flew highest and did not stoop down to them. Ormirian played about her in the air, and they flew together, one chasing the other higher and higher, till all at once the highest rays of the rising sun struck Tahanu, and she burned like her name, a great bright star. Kalesin circled again, flew low, and alighted hugely amid the ruins of the wall. "Agni Lebanon," said the dragon to the king. "Eldest," the king said to the dragon. "Aisadan varu nadanan," said the vast, hissing voice, like a sea of cymbals. Beside Lebanon, Bran the summoner of Roke stood planted solidly. He repeated the dragon's words in the speech of the making, and then said them in Hardic. "What was divided is divided." The patterner stood near them, his hair bright in the brightening light. He said, "What was built is broken. What was broken is made whole." Then he looked up yearning into the sky at the gold dragon and the red bronze one. But they had flown almost out of sight, wheeling now in vast gyres over the long falling land, where empty shadow cities faded to nothing in the light of day. "Eldest," he said, and the long head swung slowly back to him. "Will she follow the way back through the forest sometimes?" Osver asked in the speech of dragons. Kalesin's long, fathomless yellow eye regarded him. The enormous mouth seemed like the mouths of lizards, closed upon a smile. It did not speak. Then, ponderously dragging its length along the wall so that stone still standing slid and fell grating beneath its iron belly, Kalesin writhed away from them, and with a rush and rattle of upraised wings, pushed off from the hillside and flew low over the land towards the mountains, whose peaks now were bright with smoke and white steam, fire and sunlight. "Come, friends," said Seppel in his soft voice. "It's not yet our time to go free."
Sunlight was in the sky above the crowns of the highest trees, but the glade still held the chill gray of dawn. Tanar sat with her hand on Alder's hand, her face bowed down. She looked at the cold dew beading a grass blade, how it hung in tiny, delicate drops along the blade, each drop reflecting all the world. Someone spoke her name. She did not look up. "He's gone," she said. The patterner knelt by her.
He touched Alder's face with a gentle hand. He knelt there silent a while. Then he said to Tanar in her language, "My lady, I saw Tehanu. He flies golden on the other wind." Tanar glanced up at him. His face was white and worn, but there was a shadow of glory in his eyes. He struggled and then said, speaking roughly and almost inaudibly,
"Whole?"
He nodded. She stroked Alder's hand, the mender's hand, fine, skillful. Tears came into her eyes. "Let me be with him a while," she said. And she began to cry. She put her hands to her face and cried hard, bitterly, silent.
Asvir went to the little group by the door of the house. Onyx and Gamble were near the summoner, who stood, heavy and anxious, near the princess. She crouched beside Labanan, her arms across him, protecting him, daring any wizard to touch him. Her eyes flashed. She held Labanan's short steel dagger naked in her hand.
"I came back with him," Bran said to Asvir. "I tried to stay with him. I wasn't sure of the way. She won't let me near him."
"Gunnai," Asvir said, her title in Kargish, princess. Her eyes flashed up to him.
"Oh, may Atwa Wuluar be thanked and the mother praised forever," she cried. "Lord Asvir, make these accursed sorcerers go away. Kill them. They have killed my king."
She held out the dagger to him by its slender steel blade.
"No, princess.
He went with the dragon Irion, but this sorcerer brought him back to us. Let me see him." And he knelt and turned Labanan's face a little to see it better and laid his hands on his chest. "He's cold," he said. "It was a hard way back. Take him in your arms, princess. Keep him warm."
"I have tried to," she said, biting her lip.
She flung down the dagger and bent to the unconscious man.
"Oh, poor king," she said softly in Hardic. "Dear king, poor king."
Asvir got up and said to the summoner,
"I think he will be all right, Brand. She is much more use than we are now."
The summoner put out his big hand and took hold of Asvir's arm.
"Steady now," he said.
"The doorkeeper," Asvir said, going whiter than before and looking around the glade.
"He came back with the Pelnishman," Bran said. "Sit down, Asvir."
Asvir obeyed him, sitting down on a log seat the old changer had sat on in their circle the afternoon before. 1,000 years ago, it seemed. The old men had gone back to the school in the evening, and then the long night had begun, the night that brought the wall of stone so close that to sleep was to be there. To be there was terror. So no one had slept. No one, maybe, in all Roke. In all the isles, only Alder, who went to guide them. Asvir found he was dozing and shivering. Gamble tried to make him go inside the winter house, but Asvir insisted that he should be near the princess to interpret for her, and near Tanar, he thought without saying it, to protect her, to let her grieve. But Alder was done with grieving. He had passed his grief to her, to them all. His joy. The herbal came from the school and fussed about Asvir, put a winter cloak over his shoulders. He sat on in a weary, feverish half-doze, not heeding the others, dimly irritated by the presence of so many people in his sweet, silent glade, watching the sunlight creep down among the leaves. His vigil was rewarded when the princess came to him, knelt before him, looking with solicitous respect into his face, and said,
"Lord Asvir, the king would speak with you."
She helped him stand up, as if he were an old man. He did not mind. Thank you, Gainha, he said. I am not queen, she said with a laugh. You will be, said the patterner.
It was the strong tide of the full moon, and Dolphin had to wait for the slack to run between the armed cliffs. Tanar did not disembark in Gauntport till mid-morning, and then there was the long walk uphill. It was near sunset when she came through Ray Albi and took the cliff path to the house. Ged was watering the cabbages, well grown by now. He straightened up and looked at her coming to him. That hawk look, frowning. Ah, he said. Oh, my dear, she said. She hurried the last few steps as he came to her. She was tired. She was very glad to sit with him, with a glass of Spark's good red wine and watch the evening of early autumn flare into gold over all the western sea. How can I tell you everything, she said.
Tell it backward.
All right, I will. They wanted me to stay, but I said I wanted to go home. But there was a council meeting, the King's Council, you know, for the betrothal. There'll be a grand wedding and all, of course. But I don't think I have to go, because that was truly when they married. With Elfaron's ring. Our ring. He looked at her and smiled. The broad, sweet smile that she thought, perhaps wrongly, perhaps rightly, nobody but her had ever seen on his face.
Yes?
Labanon came and stood here, see, on my left. And then Sesarok came and stood here on my right, in front of Mored's throne. And I held up the ring, the way I did when we brought it to Havnor, remember? In Lukfar, in the sunlight? Labanon took it in his hands and kissed it and gave it back to me. And I put it on her arm. It just went over her hand. She's not a little woman, Sesarok. Oh, you should see her, Ged. What a beauty she is. What a lion. He's met his match. And everybody shouted. And there were festivals and so on. And so I could get away.
Go on.
Backward?
Backward.
Well, before that was Roke.
Roke's never simple.
No. They drank their red wine in silence.
Tell me of the patterner.
She smiled. Sesarok calls him the warrior. She says only a warrior would fall in love with a dragon.
Who followed him to the dry land? That night.
He followed Alder.
Ah.
Ged said with surprise and a certain satisfaction. So did others of the Masters. And Labanon. And Irion.
And Tehanu?
A silence. She went out of the house. When I came out, she was gone. A long silence. Asver saw her in the sunrise on the other wind. The silence. They're all gone. There are no dragons left in Havnor or the Western Islands. Onyx said, as that shadow place and all the shadows in it rejoined the world of light, so they regained their true realm.
We broke the world to make it whole.
After a long time, Tanar said in a soft, thin voice, the patterner believes Irion will come to the grove if he calls to her. Ged said nothing, till after a while.
Look there, Tanar.
She looked where he was looking, into the dim gulf of air above the western sea.
If she comes, she'll come from there. And if she doesn't come, she is there.
She nodded. I know. Her eyes were full of tears. Labanon sang me a song on the ship when we were going back to Havnor. She could not sing. She whispered the words. Oh, my joy. Be free. He looked away up at the forest, at the mountain, the darkening heights. Tell me, she said. Tell me what you did while I was gone.
Kept the house.
Did you walk in the forest?
Not yet, he said.
The Other Wind is an unabridged production of Fantastic Audio, an imprint of audio literature.